Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Monday Night Radio. Thank you so much for joining us. Now, I do have to tell you that I am feeling a little sick today, so if I don't sound as well as I normally do, please forgive me, but also let me know. Now, I know you're all here to talk about cults, but the first thing that I want to say is I'm going to give you Anne's tip number 35 for how to know if an email that you have received is spam. Are you ready? If the email you receive starts with, "We are a China-based dot, 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 China-based company, China-based lawyer," anything like that, it's probably spam. If you have any questions or comments about spam, we'd really love to hear them. Give us a call at our, oh, yes, our spiffy, splendid, wonderful, new toll-free number. So easy to remember. Are you ready? 866-MONDAY-6. That's it. Call 866-MONDAY-6 now if you have a question or a comment for our guest tonight. We'll be talking about cults and relationships within cults. And you can also call 866-MONDAY-6 any other time, day or night, to leave a comment or question for us. Again, that's 866-MONDAY-6. Of course, there are other ways that you can reach us as well. You can reach us on Facebook at facebook.com/Monday Night Radio. You can also send us a message by Twitter at Monday Radio. And finally, you can email us your comments at comments@MondayNightRadio.com. All right, as promised, our guest tonight is an expert on cults, and not just cults, but specifically cult relationships. Now, you may be wondering, how is it that a smart, well-educated, and even independent woman could fall under the spell of a cult leader? Well, we are going to find out as soon as we join our guest. But first, let me tell you, she is also the published author of several books, including Lucifer Rising, Photos and Memories, and in Lucifer Rising, she tells the story of a woman recently widowed who falls under the spell of a charismatic cult leader. And let's bring her on so that we can talk with her about Lucifer Rising and about the information that she has. Let's welcome Barbara Fifield. Barbara, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good evening, folks. Good evening, Anne.
Good evening, Barbara. Thank you so much for joining us on the show. We're very excited to hear what you have to tell us and to talk with you.
Oh, yeah.
But now, let me start by saying your book, Lucifer Rising, which is available on Amazon, and we will have that link up on the site after the show, or people who are listening right now could just go to Amazon and Google Lucifer Rising. And it's the story of a woman, a reporter, so a journalist, who was recently widowed, and she meets this cult leader, and she gets drawn in by him. I think she's sent to cover, sort of write a story about cults and about the cult leader, and ends up sort of being mesmerized by him and actually in a relationship with him. Now, am I right in thinking that this is a bit autobiographical?
It's a true story, actually. Yeah, it is autobiographical.
Well, tell us a bit.
It definitely is.
Well, tell us a bit about
what?
It.
What? Well, it takes place in Daytona Beach, Florida. And it happened a few years ago. My husband had passed away after 20 years, and I was very lonely. And I was reading in the Penny Saver one day about a man who did faith healing. And I thought, well, this is kind of interesting. Maybe I should try this out. It might make me feel better, you know. So I went over to his house on Wednesday nights, and he had all these women over there, and he had them lying on a couch, and he was doing hands-on healing. And I got involved with it on Wednesday nights, and before you knew it, I was dating him. And I also found out... Yeah, he was doing Reiki, which is a legitimate form of faith healing where you put your hand on somebody and you're supposed to be able to pass your energy from your hands into the person's body so that you heal them, whatever illnesses they might have, mostly physical illnesses. And I got kind of involved in it. I thought it was going to help other people out too, and he had these students over there, and he was like doing all this hands-on healing and playing all these real spooky music. It was kind of weird, you know, with candles and the dark. It was dark inside, and he had all these different gods and goddesses all over the room, and Buddhas and angels and lots of angels. And later on, he actually thought he was a reincarnation of the Archangel Lucifer, because he thought he saw himself walking. Yes, yeah. He thought he saw himself walking through a tunnel, and originally he came to Earth, he said, to save people. Well, he had this glorified thing about himself, this big ego thing, thinking he was going to save the world and save all these homeless people that were on the streets of Daytona, and he had them all living in double-wide modular homes behind his home on his property, and a lot of these people didn't pay rent, and he was helping them out, and he had a lot of females there, and I found later on that he was dating these females, and also there was sex going on, too, and sometimes group sex, which I never got involved in.
You know, and I wasn't going to ask, but I really wanted to, so thank you for volunteering that. But I'd actually like to back up. I'd like to back up a little and ask you about, you know, your initial involvement, which was through the Reiki healing. Did you actually feel that he, in some way, did something beneficial for you?
Well, I don't know if he really had these Reiki powers or not. I mean, I thought that maybe I myself was developing them, but I don't think he really had them, but was healing me. He was a very charismatic person, and he liked to dance, and he liked to do all these things that I like to do. He liked to go to fancy restaurants, and he kind of, like, you know, took me out. He kind of cobbled me, and he took me to restaurants and nice shows, and he had a lot of money, and I had a good time with him. And I kind of fell in love with him after a while, because I felt like there was something missing from my life after my husband passed away, so I kind of fell into this relationship.
So do you feel now, in retrospect, was he sort of taking advantage of your vulnerability in order to weave his spell, cast his spell on you, and bring you in under
his
control?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Oh, yeah, definitely. In fact, I broke... Well, he would, like, take me out, and I broke up with him 3 times during a year and a half that I dated this man. He seemed to... I noticed that I saw red flags that whenever I went to visit my children in another state, he didn't like it. He was very jealous of my family members. He was trying to get controlling with me. And I knew that these were red flags, that he was a dangerous person when he started getting controlling. And he would date other women while I was gone and call me on the phone and send me messages that he was dating all these women and even have me try to talk to them on the phone, which is kind of crazy, and send me emails with pictures of him dating all these women and beautiful clothes and stuff, and trying to make me jealous, you know what I mean? And when I came back, he was okay, but as soon as I went out again, it was the same old thing. He used Usually during the holidays he did this thing. He was kind of cruel in many ways. In fact, it's been 3 years, but he even occasionally sends emails to me with pictures of dating these women. Of course, I delete them. And I don't correspond with him at all. I delete his emails, and I change my phone number and everything. But maybe I should change my email, too.
So he's still trying to get you back.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. In fact, and I've had a steady boyfriend now for 2 years now, but still, and he knows it, too. But and he's seen me a couple times in public with this other fellow, but he still tries to do it. But I'm never going to go back because I know it would be very dangerous and very stupid to do such a thing, knowing the way he is.
How long were you involved with him all told?
A year and a half.
I'm sorry, say that again? A year and a half.
And in fact, one time I hadn't seen him in about 6 months, and what happened was he broke up with this one woman, and he said he needed a dance partner. So we used to take dance lessons together, and I couldn't find anybody to dance with. I mean, I advertised in the paper and the Penny Saver, and I could not find a person to go dancing with. So I just finally decided to go back with him just so I could go dancing with somebody. And what happened was one thing led to another. Before you know it, we were having sex and going out for dinner and that sort of thing. So I realized that I would just have to give up dancing. I don't have a dance partner. Too bad. I just can't not see this guy anymore. He's very dangerous. He's violent. A couple times he pushed me around when I wanted to leave his house. Yeah, he threw my purse one time and broke my suitcase one time, broke the handle off of it and broke my purse one time, and he just I was terrified of him, and then I would run out of the house, get in my car and take off and not come back for a few days. Then he calmed down and he'd be back to his good old self again until the next time that we had an argument.
Okay, so we can flesh this out a little bit. Can you tell us a little bit about your own background? Because your academic and professional background is quite high level and sophisticated.
Oh, yes. Well, I have a degree in journalism, a bachelor's degree in journalism, and I worked on a lot of newspapers in New York State. 10 years ago, I lived in New York State, and I was a reporter. And then later on, I got a master's degree in social work. Believe it or not, in social work, where I worked with families with little kids and did counseling. And you would never think I would get into such a relationship, having worked with people that, had all kinds of problems. But I believe the fact that my husband had died, and it could happen also if you go through a divorce or you have a problem where you lose your home, or illness, anything that's a major catastrophe in your life does something to you so that you become more vulnerable than you normally would be. And I believe I wasn't thinking straight after my husband died, and a lot of people are in that. They're sort of temporarily insane, so to speak. And then later on, when I began to realize what was going on and when I started to think straight again like I used to think, then I realized what a mistake I had made in my life, and I would never do it again, of course. I realized what I had walked into, a trap, so to speak, and I know how to keep my common sense now, my bearings.
And we're going to get to that in a bit, the question about how you would advise others to be able to avoid that trap. But first, I need to remind our listeners that if you have a question for Barbara or a comment, you can give us a call at 866-MONDAY-6. That's 866-MONDAY-6. You can also send us a message via Twitter at Monday Radio, or by Facebook at facebook.com/Monday Night Radio, or email us at comments@MondayNightRadio.com. We also have our chat room open on the website at blogtalkradio.com, Monday Night Radio, if you want to get involved in the online chat. So actually, Barbara, how would you recommend that people avoid this trap altogether? You identified a few key elements, I think, that these people are often vulnerable. You have just lost your husband. Sometimes I know there are young teens that have run away and are vulnerable. But, would you advise people out there?
Well, the signs of a person is very controlling, for one thing. They try to tell you what to do. You can't go visit your relatives. You can't listen to your mom and dad. You can't, you have to do what I tell you to do, not what you want to do. And being a middle-aged person, middle of life, I'm saying between 40 and 60 years old, I'm not going to listen to that. I mean, if I was younger, like in my 20s, I might be more, you know, I might go along with it. But to me, it was like a joke, sort of like a game he was playing. And that's why I left him several times. Another sign is also violence. When a person gets violent with you, like I said, he didn't really leave any marks on me, but he did shove me against the wall one time, and another few times he threw things around the room, and he got very angry, and his veins would come out on his neck, and his face would turn red. He actually looked like the devil. His face would turn really red. He had a fair, and it was very scary to look at. And I was kind of terrified. I just wasn't used to this kind of behavior from anybody. I mean, my husband never acted like this, so this was very different to me, very overly dramatic, you know. So the signs of controllingness and violence, those are the two major signs. And also trying to control you in other ways, like dating other women and trying to make you jealous. And like he was doing, sending me emails and calling me on the phone, and I wouldn't answer the phone. He would call me on the other phones, and then I would block his calls. And this would go on and on. This went on for like the first 6 months. He was constantly calling me, and I had to block all my calls.
And you mentioned that he got very upset if you went to visit your family and your children. And what did your children think of this when you were involved in this?
Oh, they think he was crazy. They said, "Mom, what are you dating a guy like this for?" And they said, "Don't you have any intelligence? I mean, you're an educated woman with a master's degree. Why are you dating a woman like a guy like this?" And I said, "Well, he's not like this all the time. He's only like this occasionally. Maybe he would get violent maybe once a month or once every, you know, 6 weeks. But not all the time. Most of the time he was very charming, and whenever he made up with me, he would bring me perfume and jewelry, and the typical abuser who, when he makes up, he always, you know, spends a lot of money on you, buys you jewelry and perfume, and those things are listed in the book, how he kind of drew her back in with his ruby bracelet. And this is the kind of thing they do, so they kind of, you get to kind of say, oh, boy, nobody else buys me all this stuff. You know, this is great. This guy really thinks highly of me. He would be spending that kind of money on me.
And is that what drew you in? Is that what kept you coming back?
Yeah, I did temporarily because, yeah, I was kind of flattered by this attention because nobody else I dated acted like this, you know. But it's not worth it, believe me. Tell your listeners, it's not worth it. No matter how much they spend on you, it's...
Okay, let's go to callers. Let's go to Rob in California. And Rob, good evening. You're on the air with Ann and Barbara Fizio.
Hi, Ann and Barbara. Here's my question.
Hi.
What would you recommend to parents and or teachers to help give children the mental tools they need to resist cults and their charismatic leaders when they become adults?
Well, they can see signs of controllingness and just tell these children and these teenagers that these people just want to use them. They might flatter them and say, well, we've got a place for you to live and we can take care of you and spend money on you so you don't have to go hungry again or any clothes or that they have a contact with God or whatever their contact is, their higher being, so to speak, and just don't fall for it. And you'll see red flags with these people, too. They're controlling, and they can be violent and very dangerous. They could even try to kill you, you know. They could be serial killers.
Is that it, Rob? Do you have any other questions for Barbara?
No, that's it. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you for the call. And remember, that number to call in is 866-MONDAY-6. That's 866-MONDAY and the number 6. Or you can send us a message by Twitter at Monday Radio or by Facebook at facebook.com/Monday Night Radio or email your comments at comments at mondaynightradio.com. So, Barbara, when did you start realizing that you really needed to get away from this guy?
Well, the first time we broke up, we had been dating about 9 months, and he kept saying he was madly in love with me and all this sort of thing. What happened was he had this woman move into his property that was married to another man. She had left her husband because he was an alcoholic, and he was beating her up. He said he was going to show her what a real man is. And then I began to realize he wasn't very faithful. So he had her move into one of his double wides behind his house, and she lived there for like 6 months, and he dated her, and that's when I broke up with him the first time. I realized he's not faithful, and this is a married woman, and she should get some help from a abuse shelter rather than going to live with him. He was taking her out for dinner all the time, taking her to shows. Then I guess her husband and her got together again about 6 months later, and she moved out, and he calls me up. He says, well, she's left. He says, well, I'd like to start dancing again. I said, well, I'm sorry, but we've broken up, and that's it. At this time, I was in between guys, you know, boyfriends, and he said, well, why don't you just meet me at the club at the Moose Lodge where we used to go dancing? So I said, well, I'll go meet you, but I can't get involved with you. I can just go dancing with you. So foolishly, and I have to admit, it was a very foolish thing, I went over to meet him, and he bought me a big bottle of this real expensive perfume that's like $500. And then we started, just slowly but surely, we started going out again. But then I had to go visit my son, and at Christmas time, it started all over again. So this, I realized that this going back and forth is not very healthy, and I was getting very stressed out from it, and I found myself taking medication for it because I couldn't live in a normal way, just worrying all the time about this relationship. So I decided that's it. Finally, that's it, and I broke up, and I just told him no more.
But he hasn't taken no for an answer because, as you said earlier in the show, he's still emailing you.
Oh, yes, he is. But I just – and I have told – a couple times he emailed me if I was still dating somebody, and I said I was. So – and he stopped. But I'm going to have to email – I don't know. I might have to change my email address.
So – but he's local to you. And you sometimes still run into him.
Well, I have not. He never comes to my house for some reason. He lives a good 40 minutes away from me, and he's never driven down in this direction where I live in south of Daytona. He lives north of Daytona, near close to Ormond Beach. So fortunately, he's never come near me, and I never go near his house. And I've been avoiding all the areas where we used to hang out. I don't even go to the Moose Club anymore. I've just been avoiding them, and so I haven't seen him. I really haven't seen him in 3 years. So,
and to the best of your knowledge, though, he is still running this cult?
I have no idea. You know, I have not seen anything in the paper or in the Penny Saver, so maybe he stopped. I found out that after we broke up that he moved in with some woman in Ormond Beach, and he's living at her house now. So he probably doesn't do it anymore because she doesn't believe in it, and she belongs to the yacht club, and they go to the yacht club together. And according to him, the few things he sent me were pictures of them at the yacht club. So as far as I really don't care anymore. I'm just glad that he's out of my life and that she's taken up the empty space that I used to occupy. So I'm just glad.
And just to remind people, you can call our guest. We're chatting with Barbara Fifield, who is, shall we say, a survivor relationship. She's written a book that's, it's a novel, but it is essentially autobiographical, called Lucifer Rising. It's available on Amazon, and you can also look up the link on our website. You can call Barbara to ask her any questions you may have or with your comments at 866-MONDAY-6. or send us an email at comments@mondaynightradio.com. And we have a question, Barbara, that's coming over the wire. And this person's wondering, how did he make money? How you know, it seems like he had a lot of money. He was spending a lot of money on you. And
He owned a lot of businesses. He owned some TV repair shops and other appliance, major appliance stores. Plus, he did a I think it was a grass-cutting business. He had people working under him. Plus, he owned a lot of real estate. He was renting two or three houses out. So he was making money from the real estate and these other businesses. He had quite a lot of money on him. I think probably $500,000 or $600,000. I mean, he wasn't a millionaire, but he was pretty well off, let's put it that way.
Well, so now here's a question then. Well, first of all, was he actually working these television repair shops and the lawn shop? I mean, was he doing manual labor, or he just had employees and he was running around
buying? No, he had people working under him. He had people working for him. He had at one time when he was younger, but now he was in his 60s, so he was semi-retired, and he was drawing Social Security, but he just had people working under him.
So he was 60 years old, but he still had the stamina to have sex with the different women he was seeing and engage in group sex?
I want to let you know. He emailed me one time that he was having, after I broke up with him, that he was having sex with three different women. It was during Bike Week 3 years ago. We have, like, Bike Week twice a year here in the fall and in the spring. And one of them was one of the ladies that worked the bars during Bike Week. Plus, I guess the other one was this new woman that hooked up with him that he met in Oktoberfest the year before. And then there was a third, I don't know who the third woman was. But he told me he was doing it with three. He might have been bragging, but it's possible because he was the type of person who used to pick up prostitutes on the side of the road as he drove by. That's what he told me. And I would think, well, gee, wouldn't you get some kind of disease or something? So that's another reason I broke up with him. I definitely didn't want to pick anything up, and I never did. I was checked for everything, for all kinds of diseases, just to make sure, you know. But he can be very dangerous, somebody like that.
Oh, absolutely. But so what I'd like to know then is, how do you distinguish him? What suggests that he was running a cult as compared to just a jerk with a lot of money who slept with a lot of women? Can you make that distinction for us?
Well, he had all these teachings, and he had people come in for teachings, and then he'd do some meditations with them. And he basically told everybody who he thought he was. He had people coming and staying in his backyard, and people that came from North Carolina would come every winter and stay in his backyard in their campers. And he actually believed in this stuff, that this metaphysical stuff, and he also did some astral projecting. One time believe it or not, I don't know if you believe in astral projecting or not, but one time I asked him, if you can astral project, why don't you come visit me at night while I'm asleep? This is like when I was going out with him in the beginning of our relationship before we started fighting and everything. And sure enough, one night I went to sleep, and I could feel feel him almost breathing on me. And I didn't see any physical body, but it was really spooky, like a ghost, you know, like a spirit around me, like something breathing and moving around in the dark, and it was kind of creepy. So evidently he had this ability. He must have practiced it or something, and then he used to he used to rise out of his body. It's in the book, too. I talk about the different times he, like, went up above his body and then came down again. He could do a lot of different things that most people can't do. He had a lot of psychic abilities.
And so getting back to the book then, where does it diverge from the reality of your story? I mean, what's different other than the names?
Well, a lot of it's very similar. I have one scene in the book where they're on a boat in the middle of the Halifax River in Daytona, and they talk about reincarnation. Now, I'm a person, I sort of believe in reincarnation. I've had some readings done, and I believe I might have known him in past lifetimes. And in the book, he says that, yes, I was married to you, and we were husband and wife, and I can't believe him as a reporter named Alpha Eldridge. I can't believe that these things happened. Then I start to see this vision of what had happened in a former lifetime. And we're sitting in a church, actually, and he actually remembers different things that happened to us between us in other lifetimes. But this is kind of exaggerated a little bit to make it look more like a fantasy novel. But he actually believed in this, and so the fact that I exaggerated it a little bit is that part is fantasy.
And so I'm curious then, Barbara, if the book is so autobiographical, why did you choose to publish it as a novel? Were you fearful that he might come after you, or was it just a
marketing
decision?
I was afraid, yes, because he bought my first book on Amazon, Photographs of Memories, and I was so afraid that he would see himself in the novel. But as far as I know, he's never bought the novel. I mean, as far as I know, I know he read the first book, but I'm surprised that he didn't buy the second book. Maybe whether he would recognize himself in the novel or not, I have no idea. But even his name is very similar to the character in the main book. I'm not going to tell you what his real name is, but his name is Terrell Toro, and his name is very similar to Terrell, his first name. So it's kind of like a play on words, so to speak. But the way I describe him in the book, how his face turned red and how he got very angry and the veins stood out on his neck is exactly the way he was in real life.
And did he only bring in women, or were there also male members of his cult?
Oh, there were male members. There was the one guy from North Carolina who used to come down every winter and spend the whole winter down there on his property and stay there. And he was into the metaphysical, too. And he used to go to this cult in Asheville, North Carolina, where so-called this guy Merlin, he thought he was the reincarnation of Merlin, you know, in the King Arthur saga. Isn't that something? He invited me to come up there sometime, and I said, no, I'm not going to get involved in that. All these druids and stuff. There are a bunch of druids and people doing all these activities, these winter solstices and stuff. But there were other people, too, but they're mostly homeless people that stayed there. They had no place to stay, and he said, oh, you can stay in the back. There was one couple. There was a man and his girlfriend, I remember. They stayed there for 3 months until he found out that the woman was stealing from him. She was going into his kitchen and taking things, and taking food and pots and pans and stealing jewelry and all kinds of stuff that belonged to him, so he had to tell him to leave. He had some people that were possibly on drugs, and I found out that earlier in life he himself used to smoke weed. I have no idea if I don't think he's used heavy drugs, but he did smoke weed when he was younger. But he had a son who was living with him who was 42 years old, and he was on crack cocaine, and he was living in one of the trailers in the back. So all these very, creepy people, I call them creepy people, were living back there, and they kind of gave me the creeps. And occasionally this son of his would get in a fight with his girlfriend, they'd get in a fight, and they'd have to go to the hospital because he beat her up. And I could see all kinds of signs of abuse going on and violence with his son and his girlfriend. Not as bad with his father, Terrell, but Terrell was not as bad as the son, but it was pretty creepy, and they were using drugs, and Terrell never used any drugs in front of me. He didn't even smoke cigarettes or even drink. However, I just felt very uncomfortable with that as well.
So there was never a time where they tried to get you or other members to take drugs? That was not okay?
No. I couldn't believe that this Terrell was against drugs, yet he allowed allowing his son to do it on the property with his girlfriend. And this was going on, but the guy was beating her up, and I couldn't understand it. I mean, she used to be in the Air Force, and she was intelligent and educated. why in the world did she tolerate it? I mean, in my opinion, she was only doing it for the drugs, but is it really worth it? I mean, that's the way I felt.
And remember, folks, you can give us a call and talk with our guest, who's Barbara Fifield, author and survivor from a cult relationship. Give us a call at 866-MONDAY-6 or send us a message via Twitter at Monday Radio or by Facebook at facebook.com/Monday Night Radio. Or you can also email us at comments@MondayNightRadio.com. Bob, I'm really curious. You mentioned this cast of characters that came through the cult property, if you will. Were there ever kids? Was there ever anyone under 18?
No, they were all adults. Most of them were probably in their 40s or older. He even had this older woman who was 70 years old living there with her cat and dog. She was living in a modular home. Yeah. And she was an interesting person. She just needed a place to live. She wasn't on drugs. She smoked, but she wasn't on drugs, as far as I could tell. A very nice person. He was very kind in the sense that he let people live there, but I think also he let people take advantage of him as well. But I also thought he'd take advantage of other people, like the women, the single women, like the one I told you about that was married, who was living there, and he was using her for sex, and she finally broke away and said she got tired of it and went back to her husband.
So let's talk about group sex for a moment, because that's always an interesting subject, and you mention it, and it's in the book. And so I'm just curious, you know, in my mind I'm imagining, well, not imagining anything, but I would imagine that that entails at least two or three other people in addition to him.
Right.
Maybe more. And I mean, are these participants people that you think would ordinarily have done that, or did he somehow talk them into it?
I believe he talked them into it. He was very charismatic. He kind of talked them into it. And he had been married for like 28 years to another woman and had 5 kids. He told me that even during their marriage, he used to have people come stay back there and they would have group sex with these people. I can't believe that she would actually go along with it. According to him, she enjoyed it. He also picked up hookers as well from the side of the road and brought them over because he thought his wife would enjoy it. To me, that sounds really scrungy, you know. But I guess she was afraid of him. She told... What?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I believe she was afraid of him because she called me up several times where I was dating her ex-husband. Well, the divorce was almost final, and she told me to stay away from him, that he was also a pedophile, that he had had sex with their kids. So that really turned me off because I used to work with children, and some of them had been sexually abused, and I was really against that completely. I didn't know whether she was making it up or it was true, but he told me that when his daughter had a car accident in front of his house when she was on drugs and she was a teenager 5 years earlier, and according to his ex-wife, they had had sex together because the daughter had told her mom that he was seducing her and also had had sex with this son of his that was on drugs living in his property, which is possible because a lot of drug addicts were abused children. They were abused by their parents or uncles, and they end up using drugs to get rid of the emotional pain.
I have to agree with you. That's pretty creepy stuff. We have a question from the chat room, and the question is, Barbara, do you have any psychological background information about this man's past that might suggest why he chose to become this cult leader, you know, with followers like this?
Well, I believe that he's a very egotistical person. He likes to be the center of attention. Whenever you go to a club for dancing, he wanted to show off, and he wanted to show that he was the best dancer there, and he would dance with all the women there. he's got to be the center of attention, and he would send, even now he sends me pictures of himself with these outlandish costumes on, and I can just imagine how he can be almost embarrassing to the partners he's with, because he wants to show off, and they probably feel kind of silly with him. And he likes to be the king, and everything is about him. He's very self-absorbed. And his wife told me that he spent all his time on his motorcycle going around and didn't, well, he would be working at his businesses, but he would also be going around. He had ignoring the kids, ignoring her needs, and she had to raise the kids basically by herself because he didn't want anything to do with it. He only wanted to use them for his own gratification.
Wow. We have another question coming in from the Internet, and this question, this is a little bit long, so I'm going to paraphrase, but essentially, if this guy thought he was the incarnation or reincarnation of Lucifer, then did he also think that he was rebelling against God? And if so, why would he think that was a good way to go? Because if you believe in the biblical stories and in a heaven and hell and God and Lucifer, if you believe all that, then you'd also believe in a God that's all good, and why would you want to go to hell? Do you have any insight into that?
Well, yes. He believed that he wasn't the Lucifer that had the big war in heaven with Michael, with the Archangel Michael. He believed that it was a different story. His story was he saw this tunnel and he was going down to Earth and he decided to reincarnate as a human being. He thought he could help people like Moses did or Abraham and become like a big prophet, so to speak. But he didn't do those things. He was so wrapped up in himself as being Lucifer. You know, in the Bible, he's a very egotistical, self-centered, because he stands for the ego, that he ended up wanting to be a king instead on Earth to have everybody adore him and worship him, to be like a rival to Jesus or a rival to Muhammad, so to speak. And he, by the way, he hates Jesus. If you mention Jesus' name, he gets very upset. And he doesn't like Orthodox religions at all, because it's like a rival to him, a competition, so to speak.
So bring us back to the beginning. You went there for some faith healing, and he did some Reiki healing on you, and there were other people there, and they were being healed, and there were statues and icons of all sorts of different gods and candles, as you
mm-hmm.
said, you know, very spiritual decor. And at what point did he lay on you, hey, guess what, guess who I am, and that he thought he was Lucifer? How long into your connection there did it take for him to tell you that?
Well, I'll tell you, it was about 2 months after I got to know him, this fellow from North Carolina. His name is Will. He came, used to stay with him, and they would talk into late into the night on Wednesday nights after the Reiki was over with and everybody had gone home. And they would talk about metaphysical things, and he would talk about how he could do all these different things like astral project, and Will said he could do it too. And then he told Will, and I was listening to him. I didn't really interrupt the discussion at all. That he saw himself looking through the tunnel and jumping into the void. They call it the void. I don't know what this void is, but it's your way of coming down to Earth into the physical realm. And Will remembers doing it too. And I don't know who Will was before he was born, but that's what he says he remembers doing it. And they would just be talking like they're just talking about the news, so to speak. And I was fascinated with this topic. What's this void thing? You know, I've never done this sort of thing before. So that's when he began talking about it. I would listen. I thought it was kind of interesting conversations they were having on Wednesday nights.
So now I hope this is a question you're used to or that you will not take offense at it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's sounding like it was fairly early on in your relationship that he told you he believed he was Lucifer incarnate.
Yes, yes.
Did you believe him? Well, now there's
questions. I couldn't believe him. My idea of Lucifer is an evil person. You know, I mean, I always thought of him like in these horror movies, Lucifer. If he acted like that, I definitely would have left and never come back. But he didn't act like that. Wow. He didn't act like people in the horror films. So I thought, what is this guy? Who is this guy anyway? He just remembered coming down to Earth, and he thought he was Lucifer. And he had one of these cameras where you take auras. It's an aura camera, and you can take people's auras. His aura was all light, and it was all white. Like, most people have different colors around them. His was all white light, and Lucifer means light. The meaning for Lucifer is light. And it was all white, so I thought, well, maybe he is Lucifer because he has a different kind of aura than most people have. I mean, maybe he's an angel, you know? Maybe he's an angel. So it's possible, but I don't know. It's just a weird thing to think about. So I maybe he's a human being, but he just has extreme psychic powers, extreme ability to do things that most people can't do. It's possible, but then I don't know.
Well, so that was a two-part question, which was, did you believe that he believed it, and did you believe that it was true?
I believe he believed it, yes. And it's possible maybe he was a little bit crazy. He was like, he thought he was, he imagined he was Lucifer, that he was this big archangel. It's possible that he had himself fooled. And then fooling himself, he fools other people. Whatever he was really an extremely unusual human being. That's all I can say.
And how many people did he have during the time you were involved there? How many people at the most did he have at any one time sort of under his spell?
It would differ. Some Wednesday nights he would have 30 people. Other ones he would have 5. It was different depending. He had a lot of students, and when the students went away for the summer, he didn't have so many people. But in the winter he had more, in the fall. And people, I don't know, women were very turned on by him. They were always coming by the house, wanting to take rides with him on his motorcycle. They didn't even care that I was there. It was like, to them, it was like, well, he belongs to everybody. He belongs to all the women, so to speak. So that was him. He just thought he was like Henry VIII.
And what did he do with the males, members of this cult? Like, he had the women have sex with him or go out with him. Did he try and control the men in any way?
Not really. He treated the men with respect, and he had a lot of male friends. A lot of men, believe it or not, there were a lot of ministers that used to come by his house, and sometimes he would go to church even though he didn't like Jesus and believe in him, but he would go there. His father was a Baptist minister. That's what he told me. He's no longer alive. So he had an attraction for everybody, male or female. And a lot of them didn't realize what kind of a person he really was. Some of these people never even went to his faith healing things. They just came by the house just to call on him and see how he was doing. He also ran a metaphysical bookstore in his living room. He had all kinds of books, and he had his whole foyer. It was like a library. He had turned his dining room, living room, and foyer into a bookstore, and he sold books, metaphysical books that he bought.
Interesting. And do you know, has he ever been in trouble with the law? Has anyone ever turned him in for any of the things
that
have gone on?
Well, I got an order of protection against him one time, the last time that I broke up with him, because I got tired of the phone calls. And when I called the court in Daytona Beach, they said that many women have gotten orders of protection from him. I was really surprised, including his ex-wife, but a lot of other women have too. So he really, he has been in trouble with the law that way, and sometimes his the girlfriend and the son in the backyard would have a fight, and he himself would have to call the police. The police were always coming over at least once a week to see what was going on and arrest somebody or take somebody away. And he had these homeless people that get into fights, into drug fights, too. And one person had a gun, and they were shooting. And I said, this is crazy. I can't stay here. I told him, I can't stay at your house tonight because if somebody's got a gun, forget it. So he was well known to the police.
So, and yet the power that he was exerting over you was such that you didn't say, I can't be here at all anymore because there are guns and people, the police come.
Well, that's what I did do.
This
is like a week before I left him for the last time. I said, this is it. I can't take it anymore. The next day I left and I never went back. And that was like the final straw.
And tell us what he did at that point. What things did he do to try and...
Oh, he couldn't understand why I was so upset. He said, you're going to be okay. Nobody's going to shoot you. They're just getting in a fight with each other. I said, it's dangerous. A stray bullet could come by and go through the window and hit me or hit you. I don't feel very comfortable with this going on. And I told him, this is insane. So I left. He didn't seem to understand that that people would feel afraid.
And so when you left for that final time, did he try to get you back?
Oh, of course. Yeah, he kept calling me,
right.
And I blocked all the calls. He just kept calling me, but for some crazy reason, he was afraid to come to my house. I don't know why. I'm glad he didn't. And I have a very good neighborhood I live in anyway with good police protection. But he was just afraid to come down here. He just didn't want to do it. Maybe he thought it would be dangerous to him. So
well,
he just kept calling.
Well, maybe it was that order of protection
you had. Right, right. And then he sent me a dozen bouquets of flowers the final week. And I sent them all back. Of course, I said I didn't want anything to do with him. I didn't want these flowers at all, and that was it. He tried everything under the sun to get me back, but it didn't work.
So tell us, Barbara, what does a cult leader look like? So charismatic, so, you know, clearly
he was
in love with their own sex.
Physically attractive. Yeah,
uh-huh.
He was physically attractive, well-built. He worked out. He did Tai Chi, believe it or not. Qigong and everything. He was in good shape. He just had a lot of personality and fearlessness. He just aggressive. He just come out. I couldn't believe it that the first time I met him, he actually came out to my car and he was just after me. But at the same time, he wasn't too pushy. I mean, he didn't try to kiss me or anything, but he just comes out to me. My car and wants to know where I'm going, and he kind of flattered me that he asked me where I want to go out to eat, and I myself wanted to learn how to dance. It's something I never did with my husband. It was something new to me, so I was kind of flattered by it, and other women too. He knew which made them tick. He knew what to do to turn them on.
Now, I want to turn, we have a few minutes left, and I want to turn just quickly to your other book, your other novel, just to give you a chance to talk about that. And these are both of her books. She actually has three books. She also has a book of poetry out, which has gotten some
marvelous reviews. Yeah, Passion's Evidence.
Mm-hmm. Passion's Evidence, 25 years worth of, maybe not 25 years worth, but poetry written across 25 years. But there's also another novel called Photographs and Memories. And Barbara, can you tell us about that?
Right. That's my first novel. I published it last year in April. It's about me coming to Florida 10 years ago from New York State to take care of my parents who were getting old. They were ready in their 80s, ready for a nursing home. And I had a sister who was an alcoholic, and I had to deal with her and how I dealt with her. And then later on, I had my husband's death. I mean, all this happened within a period of 2 years. So not only was I dealing with my husband's death, but my mother's death the year before, my sister's death, my only sibling. It was just too much for me to handle, I believe. It wasn't just one death. There were three deaths. And that's what it's about and how I made it in life and how I got back to, how I recuperated and got back to normal again after they passed away. And it talks about generational problems, and like everybody has to deal with this as middle-aged when their parents get old. They have to deal with the changes in their parents and what to do with them. It's something, a very common problem with people that are in their 40s, 50s, and 60s.
And correct me if I have the timeline on this. You wrote, well, tell us, what is the timeline between all of this going on, and wow, you really had a lot going on in the space of a few years. And
oh, I did.
Where does your involvement with the Tyrell character come in on that timeline? Was this before or after you were dealing with
it? It was after everybody had died. Yeah, my mother died and my sister died in 2004. My husband died in 2005. And I met this Tyrell character about 9 months after my husband passed away. That's when I met him. And I was under a lot of stress at the time, trying to pay bills, trying to take care of accounts, and you name it, the things you have to do when somebody dies. So
Right.
And it helped me to write this book. In fact, I started writing the novel right after my husband died, and then I kind of put it on hold for a while, and this was in 2005, but I finally finished it in 2009, right after I broke up with this Tyrell character. So I've been spending time writing instead of dating people like him. And my poetry, I've been writing poetry since I was 11. So this is only poetry for the last 25, 30 years, but I have been writing poetry all along for quite a long time.
And your book of poetry, as I said, has gotten some just amazing reviews, and congratulations on that, because, you know, getting poetry isn't something a lot of people like to read poetry, but people's tastes are so different. And of course, poetry is a very personal thing to write. So, it's not always what you write isn't always what other people want, you know, appreciate. And so it's wonderful that you've got such great reviews on your poetry book.
Thank you.
The book about, you're welcome, A Photograph and Memory. Does it touch at all on the Tyrell episode?
No, this is before I met him. Actually, it takes place, what happens is I dated one person very briefly after my husband passed away, 6 months after my husband passed away, before I met Tyrell, and it talks about the character Angela, and she meets this guy, and he kind of flatters her because he said, well, my wife just died a year ago, and we have something in common. So she says, thinks of him, she meets him at her poetry club, and this is autobiographical, too. And she falls in love with him, but she doesn't have any sex with him because she's still in love with her husband, and she really doesn't want to get involved with him that way. And after a while, he realizes that she doesn't want a full relationship with him, so he starts dating other women. And then at the end of the book, she learns to accept her husband's death and everybody who died, and get on with her life and get a job and, you know, make something of herself.
And that book is Photographs and Memories. The book of poetry is Passion's Evidence. And the book we're discussing now, which is Barbara's story about being involved with a cult leader, is Lucifer Rising. You can pick it up on Amazon. Just go to Amazon and search for Lucifer Rising, or that link will be up on our website. And Barbara, we have just another minute to go. Is there anything in this last minute that you'd like to say?
Yes, I have a website. Yeah, I have a website, www.fifieldauthor.com, and Fifield is spelled F-I-F-I-E-L-D. And I have videos and audios of all three books on there, and anybody wants to email me on there, they can too.
Well, Barbara, thank you so much for joining us. And, of course, we'll have all of those links on our website as well for you. And thank you so much for coming. Will you join us again?
You're welcome. I enjoyed talking to you.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much, everyone out there, for listening tonight. And we look forward to seeing you, or at least hearing you, or you hearing us next week at Monday Night Radio. And you can call and leave comments about the show anytime at 866-MONDAY-6 or write to us at comments@mondaynightradio.com. Talk with you next week.